Okay, let's start with a content notification, shall we? The Queer Conjure podcast is about queer people, trans people, witches, neurodivergent people, you know, marginalized people who have experienced a wide spectrum of community pleasure and structural harm. We're going to talk about all of it, the magical, the joyful, the painful. We are embracing the light as well as the shadows. If that doesn't sound like what you're up for right now, I invite you to move on to another podcast. Have fun. If it is something you want to listen to right now, get cozy, babies, because here we go. Hello, dear. How the hell are you? How's your body feeling these days? What is happening at your altar these days? What's on there that's your favorite? And what magical practice is it serving? I must tell you that on my altar right now, my absolute favorite thing are these runes that my sweetheart knitted. They almost feel like a felted stone. So they're like purplish, greenish stones that are knitted. And then they have the runes in orange upon them. They're so amazing and beautiful and feel really great in my hands. And I'm just like really fucking grateful that I have such a radically creative sweetie in my life. So thanks, babe. All right, getting back to it. I'm going to share a recording where Ava tells me what they are currently nerding out about, because this is the first of what we're going to call the nerding out episodes, a nerd out episode. It might become a regular part of our podcast journey, because within Queer Conjure, as you know, we honor the neuroqueer experience. We make space and accommodate and value and honor the thing neuroqueers love the most, which is a space to nerd out about their special interest at the time. We love a special interest and we never have enough time to talk about it. So that's why we have this podcast episode. Ava is going to share with us everything they've been doing, intuitive research. Within the podcast, they actually created a new term, which is intuitive and extuitive. I fucking love it. So they've been doing intuitive research about dragon dreaming. I'd never heard about this before. So after the recording, after I asked Ava a million questions, I browsed the dragondreaming.org website. And I want to read a little excerpt from their section about how dragon dreaming came to be. But before I do that, once again, I have a couple quick housekeeping notes. I've already mentioned that part of my neuroqueerness is word salad, honey. Eat it up. Queer Conjure has been in a breakup process with our former website development company, Wix, out of solidarity for the boycott, divest, sanction movement. At the moment, our website is still visible, but we are not operating from it. We are operating from Substack, from our new email address, queerconjure@gmail.com. We have an Etsy. We're using Calendly, and Ava will continue to curate our Instagram and TikTok. Do we have a TikTok? I think we have a TikTok. Anyway, the best way to follow us is to support us through Substack. That is where we intend to be the busiest and the most visible. All right, bear with me one more minute. This is my pitch inspired by those donate to NPR clips. Ava and I do our QC work in these small liminal spaces between the work we do in order to survive capitalism. To us, Queer Conjure is an actual spirit, an actual energetic being, and we have taken responsibility for them and love them with all of our hearts. Queer Conjure is an essential part of our liberation work and our personal, spiritual, magical practices. So 2024 is set up to be a year of incredible growth for us, incredible expansion, increased consistency. You know, Goddix willing and the waters thrive. For reasons I'm not going to get into now, the next 2 years are a make or break situation for Queer Conjure. This is our time crunch where we absolutely must find a financially stable way to keep Queer Conjure going in a way that creates a better world. I think that's all I want to say for now is that we're actually in a little bit of a time crunch to see if Queer Conjure can become a sustainable part of our lives, something that is reciprocal rather than feeling like we are screaming out into the void. Although I'm starting to like feeling like I'm screaming into the void because that means I don't have to worry about anybody judging what I say. You can help us succeed by supporting our Etsy shop, subscribing to our Substack, and sharing this podcast with others. One last thing. When we earn money, we put it into making this podcast better and better, better sound quality, better guests, better show notes, better topics. So it's an investment, babe. It's an investment. Okay, on with the show. I guess we're going to start our first nerd out episode by you telling me the thing you're nerding out about right now.
Yes, I would love to. So I was recently visiting a friend in Spain. They are volunteering with a European Solidarity Project, which is a organization from based in the European Union where different countries can make different groups that people can volunteer for. It's such a cool concept because people can, their travel is paid for and they get often get pocket money and food and accommodation paid for, and they volunteer for different, all different kinds of projects across the continent. And this one is really cool. They're called the Semillistas, and basically they are creating seed shelters and sowing seeds in very arid spaces, like in southern Spain, specifically in, was Orihuela the town that I was in, which is so cool. So they're trying to kind of replenish the land, and because it's very arid. And one of the people who started it came in to talk to everybody who was volunteering to kind of, because people were curious, it's like, how do you start a Europe, like how do you start one of these projects? So they came, like, kind of give their two cents on that. And they talked about like the political aspects of it and the
I'm still here. I clap. Keep talking.
Oh, no. I like this view.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I should just leave it like that. Okay.
Yeah. For those listening, Jasper turned the camera and there's mountains behind. Beautiful. But oh, yeah, this person, Patricia, came and was talking about the kind of like politics, I guess, like the you need to have three members, like all these different things, and like how one applies. But also they got into their what they use as a foundation for creating a business, but also a community that they learned called Dragon Dreaming. And ever since I learned about that, I was like nerding out about it. So
Dragon Dreaming.
Dragon Dreaming. So Dragon Dreaming is founded in, and this is all information that I got from Patricia. I haven't done my like own real research into it as much as I've done just like introspective thinking about how it relates to my life and like the rhythms that I see. Like introspective research, but not really extrospective.
Yeah, extra perspective. Love it. Intro, exo.
But so it's based and originated in Australia and specifically the Aboriginal groups there. So the foundation is Indigenous knowledge from all over the world and how that aligns with nonviolent communication. So like already I was like fascinated, but especially so a little tangent was like I've been recently learning about the need of violence and like how the privilege to be nonviolent is like a very I've come awoken to how I don't know, I used to be somebody who was like, oh, we don't need like violence is something we should kind of leave out. And like while I believe in nonviolent communication and how I want to act from nonviolence, it's not always something that everybody has the privilege of having when it comes to accessing their needs. Which I think is worth mentioning. Yeah, especially if you want to read up about that, Frantz Fanon talks about that a lot. He's a theorist from the 60s, and I think he has a really fascinating perspective on violence as it's taught by colonists and how it exists in the has to exist in the process of decolonizing. As a side
Can you
note.
say the name again?
Frantz Fanon, it's FRANZ space FANON. So back to Dragon Dreaming though. So the idea that the title Dragon Dreaming is like how to face kind of your biggest challenges when it comes to realizing your dreams. Because the dragon is kind of the symbol of, like the knight must fight the dragon to, and that's like the tower, right? It's like the big climax moment. And this idea kind of originated with basically the concept of like we don't have good support systems for how to face these things. So they the foundations for how they say we should face the dragons when we're creating or manifesting our dreams is they have three pillars. So it's care for the earth, care for community, and care for the individual. Which this is what hooked me because I was like,
Yeah.
never have I heard a business model that has kind of brought in these three pillars and how important it actually is to like take care of yourself as equally as much as you do the earth and your community. And it gives you that strong like triangle base to build off of.
So wait, Dragon Dreaming is a business model that was inspired by Aboriginal Indigenous people.
Yeah, and I guess it's not like it doesn't necessarily have to be business. Like I think that that's kind of what like it's more just like manifesting a desire. And so that kind of shows up in the way of business, but yes.
Okay, cool. Keep going. I'm gonna get it.
It's so yeah, it grows, it grows. So this is the part that like, so I can send you pictures later too, but it's kind of, there's like a little circle with a cross, and there's four aspects, and it kind of represents the wheel of time and how an idea comes to exist. So you have on this, and it's also like a, so it's an axis, right? So on the top, you have theory. On the bottom, you have practicality. On the left, you have the individual. And on the right, you have the environment. So if you're reading it like a clock, it would be like 12 o'clock theory, 3 o'clock environment, 6 o'clock practical, 9 o'clock individual.
And this
And
is, sorry,
no,
this
go
is
ahead.
how an idea moves from kind of like invisible to visible, or like ethereal to material.
Well, so the person who's explaining to me later went on to describe the idea that like this, it like it's the way that all things exist is that they don't exist on a linear timeline, and therefore it can really start at any point. But really, it's like there are these little hubs of creative energy within each of the axes. So like between theory and environment, or theory and an individual, or practical and individual, and practical and environment, there's different things that manifest. And I think it makes more sense when I label those things too. So like between theory and environment is planning. And then from environment to practical is doing. And then practical to individual is celebrate. And theory to individual is dream. So it's like dream, plan, do, celebrate. Dream, plan, do, celebrate. And so you can start at any point with that, really. Like inspiration strikes as you're doing, as you're celebrating, as you're planning, and as you're dreaming. But what I thought was so fascinating about this was the inclusion of all these things as integral to manifesting. And what this person brought up who's teaching it to me was that you have people who have strengths in each of these parts, and they're equally as important. The people who celebrate are equally as important as people who do, as people who plan, and as people who dream. And this like genuinely brought tears to my eyes, like hearing, because I don't think I've ever heard somebody who runs a successful, like something that was so inspirational. I don't know, they're bringing life back to these mountains that have been so mistreated by humans. And they're doing it with the basis of the importance of dreaming and celebrating as equal as planning and doing. And they were saying that they're somebody who's, they're a heavy planner, and they don't really typically understand the celebrators or the dreamers, but they realize they need them, because if they're planning without dreams, and if they're doing without celebrating, there's going to be a heavy imbalance. And I myself, I think I'm such a dream plan, like on the, I'm on the theory axis, so I'm like, I'm such a dreamer and a planner, and sometimes it takes like a lot of like, I need the support to celebrate, you know, to like, I think that's something I love about the creation of Queer Conjure between us, is that it's like our meetings are such a celebratory moment. I'm always like, oh yeah, look at how far we've come, like yeah.
So, dreamers, celebrators, and doers, and then like dreaming and wait, dream, plan, do. Is that it?
Yeah. Dream,
Okay.
plan, do, celebrate.
So, dreamers and celebrators are just as important as doers. And that is if a doer is trying to do the celebrating, that might cause a little bit of dissonance because they're trying to take on all the roles rather than like having a community that does roles.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Okay.
so like I think one, so what the point, that's something that the person pointed out, is that within each of these, like within dreaming, there is planning, doing, and celebrating within a dream. And within a plant, there's each of these things are like a fractal, like how a plant grows. You have, or how tarot works, you know, you have these similar like circles that run within each era. But the idea is that you're moving from an extractive form of creation to a regenerative form, because you're trying to be sustainable, right? Like, yeah, so it's like, and it's fascinating because it's like you need the environment to plan and do, and the individual to celebrate and dream. And you need theory to dream and plan, and you need practicality to celebrate and do. So for me, I always like, I have a lot of Virgo in my chart, and it's like people have always told me, you're a doer, you're a practical, you're an earthy being. And I've always been like, no, I'm gonna exist in the ether realms. Like, don't tell me what to do. But I love this modality because it's like within theory and within the ether realms, there is dreaming and planning. And also like within practical, there's doing and there's celebrating. Like there is these, there's not just two. Like, you know, it's a beyond binary form of viewing how we create, rather than it just being like you are inside and then you're outside. It's like, well, there's all this that I do outside and there's all this that I do inside, you know. There's all this that I do in the in between. Yeah,
Yeah.
regeneration.
So nobody's ever just one thing, right? We're all the things. It's just a matter of like which part of our wheel is turned out.
Yes, and
Okay.
I think like this is where I started to like my brain started to connect the dots between different modalities like human design and astrology, because it's like within when I'm interacting with certain energy, like when somebody else is heavy planning, I might fall back more into the doing. When somebody is like heavy celebrator, I might fall into a more of a dream state because I want to feed their celebration. Like we aren't existing in an alienated bubble. Like we are constantly interacting with the energies of everybody around us. And so there's more within each. I hope it's not getting kind of confusing to envision. I do think maybe this is a journal podcast. I was like having a piece of paper or something, however it helps you to like envision, might be helpful.
Maybe you could create some sort of illustration and we can put it on our Substack. So if people are feeling overwhelmed, they can see the visual of it.
Yes, absolutely. That's
Okay.
actually a good idea. I can pull up the official document too.
I want to ask a question that like goes back to the very beginning of what you were saying about this being indigenous knowledge that aligns with nonviolent communication. And I'm
Yeah.
really curious what that has to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, so I think that the indigenous like stem or root of this idea is the concept of like valuing each part of the process. And I think that's also how it ties to like nonviolent communication as well, is that we're not trying to build a pyramid or say that one thing leads to the other, rather that like we're viewing everything as a web that is highly interconnected, and removing one thing will completely alter the whole system. So it can't just be like, I don't like mosquitoes, let's kill them all. Like, because we need mosquitoes to feed other bugs. I was like, why do we need mosquitoes?
You're like, wait, why do we need those little fuckers?
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I just wanted to say about the mosquitoes too, is just because we don't understand beings' function in our ecosystem doesn't mean they're not valuable. Like,
Yeah.
just like having, like going into every single thing we do with the assumption that every creature being we interact with has significant value, rather than expecting beings and creatures and other people to prove their value to us, I think is a really cool idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's another thing that this system kind of implies is that maybe it's like rather than requiring somebody to kind of live up to your expectations or your needs that like need to be met, you can seek to understand them. Like I think that within a typical like capitalistic business model, it's very much like you have to meet these quota, you have to like you are this role and you have to be this, rather than like, hey dude, you're here, like let's get you involved. Like, oh, let me see and adapt to like where you fit best. So there's like a few more kind of categories that fit into each of the four quadrants that would be kind of like I like to view it as a clock because that's how my brain sees all these 12 things because there's 12 hours that I'd like to kind of run through because I think that it kind of gets you deeper in to massage your brain to
Love a good
marinate. Love a good brain massage. So in the planning quadrant, you consider, oh wait, actually let's start with the dreaming quadrant. So you first, obviously like there's no first, they can happen at any point, but one would become aware and then be motivated and then gather info. So you can kind of see how like within the dream there's kind of starting to be planning and doing. So you, yeah, awareness, motivation, and information gathering. And then as you go to planning, you consider alternatives, you design a strategy, and you trial and error. So you're already starting to see how like each of these energies aren't just one task and like one action. And that it requires also like maybe before you even go to doing, you go back to dreaming. Or before you go, like, there's no set path. It offers the opportunity for like a labyrinth almost.
It's so interesting to me how all of our conversations lead back to like a spiral or a labyrinth or like trails that come back and forth against each other. I love that. One of the visuals I'm getting is like when you set mirrors up just right, so it seems like there's infinite versions of yourself, but they get far, like they appear to get farther and smaller. So like your little like, here's the big clock, here's the littler clock inside of that, here's the littler clock. It's like those Russian dolls. It's really cool.
I know this is, I think, what what spirituality means to me is the fact that we are on a spinning globe that is spinning on its axis and also spinning around something else. And that's the pattern we see reoccurring in all things, like idealized and physical. And to me, it's like, how could I not believe then that like there's an, like regardless of how much willpower we invoke as humans, I don't think we escape that pattern. Like I don't, and that's the, I think the essence people describe as like fate is like somehow we always end up on the same kind of rhythm. And it's, because like physics, like we're literally spinning on an axis. Like if you try to, it reminds me of the, I don't know, pulling a pot. If you're a potter, you put the clay on and then you're spinning it. If you try to do one upward movement, you're changing the whole pot because it's constantly moving and rubbing against your finger. Like it's, you can't just alter one side.
Oh my God, that's such a good visual. Fucking love that. Yeah, and we are the clay and the fingers on the clay and the doohickey that spins the clay all together. Like that one, like we all contain multitude. It's what we're talking about. Yeah. I love that you are learning about this within the framework of regenerative like repair work. You're doing repair work and you're learning about this thing where you're doing this introspective research about going back to a model where every action and every being has their value recognized as equal. I think that's
Yeah.
really cool.
Exactly.
I have two questions and they're kind of big ones. So no pressure to like immediately know how you want to answer them right away. Because it's the Aboriginal Indigenous piece. Whenever we're speaking of Indigenous knowledge, I want to ask, how can we apply this and do our best to avoid co-opting? So that's question number one. How can we be inspired by Dragon Dream without co-opting from Indigenous traditions? And then my second question is, how can we apply that dragon dreaming to queer conjurer's vision, which is to queer the path towards magic liberation? So, like, basically, how can this move us further on that path towards liberation?
Could you define co-opting, please?
Co-opting, like appropriating, like
Okay.
taking something from a culture that is very much not yours and doing whatever the fuck you want with it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good question. I mean, obviously, it's like I do want to approach it without just being like, "Whoa, this is what's off the cuff." But I will also say that I don't know enough about the origins of this vision to see like what exactly is being taken from who or what. And also, to appropriate is to take and say, "This is mine, and this is what it means to me." And to see these ideas and recognize them in my own life. I don't know where that falls in that.
I think what's coming up for me around this co-opting, appropriating thing is that what is happening here is we are seeing something that is already in alignment with the value systems we want to live within, and we're inspired by this practice that is doing the thing we also want to be doing. So I'm gonna have to think about that some more as well. It's always an interesting question that we have to keep asking ourselves over and over within our magical practices. Our
Yeah,
lives in
absolutely.
general. And I think an important part is like, don't take something that's sacred and turn it into an aesthetic or a vibe or
Yeah.
whatever the fuck you want to call it.
I agree. I think that's an important question to bring up, and I think that like that also makes me be like, yeah, like why it's so important to learn as much as I can and like continue to unpeel the layers of like where this came from and what I'm learning from it.
You started by saying, this is the introspective research I'm doing before I move on to
Yeah.
extrospective research. I actually really like that because you are valuing the curiosity and the inspiration before you move on to, I have to make sure I know like academically and like fact-checkingly what I'm talking about before I can talk about it.
Yeah, that's so true. 'Cause it's like, yeah, I think that's also like what this kind of idea represents is like both and have like incredible value and are necessary. And I will do all. And also this, yeah, like I like it's recognizing that like I think that one something that I learn when I read theorists who aren't white or theorists who are specifically theorizing on like how race affects a social group or how generational trauma affects a group. It's like I'm learning more about the information removed from me because of whiteness.
Mm.
That's like what whiteness does, right? Is it's isolates you and it takes you to the space of giving you the idea that you are superior in some way and therefore don't need to know certain knowledge. But what understanding this is also doing is like, I think that a lot of Indigenous knowledge is innate, like, and it is within us all, and it is the removal of ourselves from every other living being that has like severed this inherent knowledge, because it's not like this is new. Like, it's like this information and these patterns were known and have been known. And then whiteness as a concept was like, actually, like, I'm not nature. I'm something better. And therefore, I get to destroy nature. And therefore, I get to do this, this, and this, and that. And that's therefore, I get to put like my own personal desire above consideration for any other creature. And it's brought us so far away from our roots. And so, I think it's like, as a white person discovering a modality like this, it's like a remembering, like a recongealing back to the earth and its patterns and how everything has always grown. Yeah. So I think also taking that to how does this assist us in queering the path to magical liberation? It's like, it's another, because like the binaries are also a construct of whiteness.
Wait,
Like
can you say
you're
what you said about the Bible and binaries really quick? Because that
Oh
is
yeah.
definitely a part of whiteness.
Absolutely. So yeah, as a I'm about to go into Bible talk. I for the first time yesterday decided I was going to read the Bible. And because my family has a like 1966 edition of the Jerusalem Bible here, and it just looks like a beautiful book, and so I was like, I'm going to look at it. I was like waiting for the bathtub to fill up. But what was fascinating about it, so I was reading the story of Adam and Eve, and I've at going into Christianity from the perspective of like, I wasn't raised with it very heavily, so I don't have like the what it all means in my mind from the priest's mouth. So I was just reading the words and seeing like what they meant to me and how they resonated. And it says, so if the snake tempted Eve to eat this apple, and if she ate it, she would gain the knowledge of good and bad, the knowledge of the gods, and therefore would have to be removed from the Garden of Eden. And when she eats it, she's given the knowledge of good and bad, and then immediately clothes herself. And I interpreted this as like this understanding of the binary of like hierarchy of removal from everything existing on a plane. Like, there's no judgment, but like, instead, we give ourselves this, like, quote unquote, power of the gods of judgment of what is good and what is bad, the binary, there being two things that everything must fit into. And therefore, there's no more, like, now nudity is no longer sacred. Now nudity is seen as like something that needs to be hidden, and there's badness. So yes, the root of all evil is the binary, essentially.
Yeah. So some of the introspective research that I'm doing is I have this theory that if each individual were to track their lineage back far enough, they would come to belonging to a culture that did celebrate. That did value the dreaming and the celebrating just as much as the doing, like something that was equitable, something that was made space for more than good or evil. I think that all of us could find within our lineage a tradition or a value system or like cultural morality, I don't know what the fuck you want to call it, that meets that non-hierarchical valuing,
and within that being able to see the sacred within everything. And then we could trace it back up to where a binary was introduced, because the story that you're telling about the Bible, the theme that comes up for me is binary creates shame. Whereas a transgender, genderqueer person, I totally feel binaries have created so much shame within my existence. So, and even just the way that I'm describing this is like, I am going through the different clocks within the clock that you just described.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I only ran over two of the quadrants for the like the last little sections. I think I could run through the last little hours on the sections.
Real there's quick. So much to talk about in it, though.
I know, which is why I'm so like, I literally was just given the basics and I'm like running wild with it in my brain. I'm like, it means everything. So in the doing quadrant, there is implement, management, and follow through.
Okay.
And then in the celebrate quadrant, there is wisdom, new skills, and transformative resolutions.
I was not tying myself to celebrating or celebrators until you said that part, because the space that I'm in my life right now, I am, I'm spending a lot of time with other mammals, but not people, not humans. Spending a lot of time with animals that are not human and very little time with humans. So I've had a lot of space to actually look at the wisdom that is available, and look at my new skills that are available. And I am actually experiencing, like, I am making resolutions that are transformative. Like those, that is all very much like where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point though, because it's like, what like emotions do we tie to each of these quadrants, and like how we expect them to actually look like? Because you're saying like transformative resolution, you weren't tying yourself to celebration, because you're not in like, when I don't know, maybe when you think of celebration, you think of like, you're good.
Yeah, confetti, dancing, balloons.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, it's, I don't know, I if you see all of these quadrants and how they function with a ritual too, it's like the outcome, the understanding. And sometimes at the end, I'm realizing how much grief was inside of me that I needed to let go. And that doesn't always, that's a celebration, but it doesn't always look like confetti. Sometimes it feels like I have to go in and hold my inner child. And that's like a celebration because nobody did that before. But like, it's still like such a bummer that it had to happen, you know?
Yeah. I really like this visual you just brought up of like, because when we find our inner children and we're holding them, it's usually when we have really discovered a really deep pain point. So like, it is kind of hard to imagine, like, I've gotten down to like the hardest, most hurtful part, and I'm going to try to create some like what I've been calling wound care. Like, I want to do some wound care right here. It's hard to remember that just the fact that we've gotten to that point of healing is worth celebrating. Like, we don't actually have to do the healing in order to celebrate it. Like, we've gotten to a new level.
Yeah, that's such a, that message I think comes up like at least once a week for me. One of my like habits that I'm trying to break is that I'll like self-isolate. I'll do the Virgo thing and I'll hermit up really hardcore. But I remember when I was in therapy and I was talking to my therapist at the time about like how frustrating it is when I do the hermit thing. They're like, look at how much you travel though without leaving the house.
Oh yeah. It's like this thing I heard
Your body can tell you everything you need to know about the cosmos. So, like, maybe you haven't gotten out of bed yet, but you still have access to the cosmos.
Yeah. You know, that was something else that I was thinking about when I was reading the Bible yesterday. I really never thought I'd be that guy. I was reading the part about like creating the earth in 6 days and resting in the seventh. It was like saying that there were the waters of life, and then there was light. It's like the first day was light, and the second day was a vault that was heaven. So it was like a boundary that was heaven that separated the waters of the earth and the waters of the land. And it made me like I was envisioning it as my as like consciousness, right? So like first you become aware, and then you're like there is the inside of me and there's the outside of me, which I mean that heaven is the body. That like blew my mind, because I was like, I always when people would talk about heaven, I was like, oh yeah, so there's earth and there's heaven and that's it. But like heaven was the boundary between the cosmos and the earth.
But I had no idea. I'm so
Yeah,
glad you read part of the Bible.
I know.
That's wild. I'm gonna have to think about that some more. Do you mind if we kind of wrap up with me asking you one more question?
Yeah, absolutely.
What is one way you can notice that this dragon dreaming concept came to you at the moment you needed it?
I think that, you know, like I am like I don't really have a grounded root space that I feel super like confident in, a space that I call like home and that I feel really like secure about. And I think that I spend a lot of time trying to think my way out of like getting to that spot. And I mentioned like earlier when I was like when hearing that there's like the dream, the plan, celebrate and do, it brought tears to my eyes, because I was like, these are each so valuable, and I think I've tried to like plan my way or do my way out of where I think I need to be or like how to get there. And I could also like celebrate and dream, and those are the same amount of energy towards the same action. And maybe that's like maybe that's where my energy works best at. And maybe it's like I haven't been accessing what I wanted to access because I've been relying on things that aren't where my energy is the most powerful. So I think I really needed that, because I was like, I don't know, like I was in a location and like help like helping and seeing people who I was like so inspired by, and I felt like couldn't help but hear that voice that was like, oh, but it's not like this all the time, like you still don't feel secure in these aspects. But then I heard this and I was like, because that's why I don't feel secure in those aspects, is because I'm trying to like wear the boots of the planner and the doer all the time. Like it can't be there
Yeah.
all the time.
Fucking capitalism, because we are only worth value if we're producing.
Yeah.
And that's a binary too, producing, consuming, and it's cutting out the
Absolutely.
dreamers, the celebrators, and all those other little clocks you were talking about, all those quadrants.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, what I feel like my core has been in like longing for is that deep sense of community. And I think that's one of like our core commitments for Queer Conjure as well. And what this theory kind of showed me too is like, this is what community is all about. It is about connecting and weaving together everybody at whatever aspect of the wheel they're at. And that's like I think along with capitalism, the way that we've like, you know, in terms of like work and survival, the way that whiteness functions is that it's had us adapt capitalism to our and whiteness to our means of existing and connecting. And so in my mind, it's like, oh, if I want to like feel love, I also have to be like at this expert level of monetary success. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
this modality says that community has all walks of life. It doesn't have just people who have their 9-to-5 and their 401k down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's also like so bananas and silly that it's like I even have to say that, you know, like that I even have to convince myself otherwise. Because it's like, of course you're valued and loved regardless of where you are. It's so much easier to think that about others than it is about yourself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually think I said something like that in the last podcast episode about like, you have to start by loving the person it's hardest to love, which is yourself. And this, you know, this is much harder than wearing a t-shirt that says be the change you want to see in the world. Like, this is really hard. Thank you for telling me about dragon dreaming.
Thank you for listening.
So that I have a million more questions, but we'll do it at a not recorded time.
Yes, and I'm excited to learn more about it too myself and dive into it. And I hope you listeners also are excited to learn about it.
Dear lovely listeners. Yeah, I'm glad you said we have listeners, because that reminded me that with all of our episodes, but especially these little nerd out episodes that we're going to be doing, I think that inviting feedback or questions or like fact checking would be beautiful. So like, dear lovely listeners, please email queerconjure@gmail.com with whatever responses you have.
Yes. Especially, like, yeah, absolutely. I want to hear questions, comment, concerns. I want to learn and I want to hear from you.
Hey, it's Jasper. Are you a neuroqueer witch? Fabulous, fabulous. So am I, so is Ava. And we believe there is an inherent sacredness connecting queerness, transness, magic, and neurodivergence. So neuroqueer was originally coined as a verb, a way to subvert ourselves from neuronormativity and heteronormativity simultaneously. Queer Conjure is all about subverting the normative and evoking magical liberation. So if you're a neuroqueer witch, we want to hear from you. Send us an audio recording up to 4 minutes long describing the ways being a neuroqueer informs your witchcraft. Just email queerconjure@gmail.com with an attachment of your audio and we will share it on the podcast. Bye! This has been another wonderful, whimsical, heartfelt, playful, fabulous, scrumptious, splendid, awe-inspiring, badass episode of the Queer Conjure podcast. At least I think so. Brought to you by Jasper and Ava. You can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Substack, Etsy. Please rate and review our podcast and share it with others. Our theme music is brought to you by Mother Marrow. Please go check them out. They're amazing. And I'm just so glad that you were here, my dear sweet listeners. Blessed be. Mwah.